Welcome to Enabled, the weekly program about people just like you who are dealing with issues of vision loss. The program is designed to encourage you through news you can use, inspirational stories, and interviews. I'm Nancy Zimmer, your host for Enabled. Thank you for joining me. As you know, I've been doing some research, and I've determined that the five major eye diseases are, in order, number one, cataracts, number two, diabetes-related eye problems, number three, refractive errors, number four, macular degeneration, and number five, glaucoma. Last week, you heard all about the number one, cataracts. So this week, we are on to number two, diabetic eye diseases. First, I will tell you about the different types of diabetic eye diseases, and then I'll have some research information for you. The information I found comes from the National Eye Institute. They have a great website, www.nei.nih.gov. The first question is always, what is diabetic eye disease? Diabetic eye disease can affect many parts of the eye, including the retina, macula, lens, and the optic nerve. Diabetic eye disease is a group of eye conditions that can affect people with diabetes. The two big ones, diabetic retinopathy and diabetic macular edema. Diabetic retinopathy affects blood vessels in the light-sensitive tissue called the retina that lines the back of the eye. It is the most common cause of vision loss among people with diabetes and the leading cause of vision impairment and blindness among working-age adults. And the other big one, diabetic macular edema, this one's abbreviated DME, diabetic macular edema. This is a consequence of diabetic retinopathy. The DME, the edema, is swelling in an area of the retina called the macula. Diabetic eye disease also includes cataract and glaucoma. Cataract, when it's connected with diabetes, is a clouding of the eye's lens, and adults with diabetes are 2 to 5 times more likely than those without diabetes to develop cataracts. Cataracts also tend to develop at an earlier age in people with diabetes. Glaucoma is a group of diseases that damage the eye's optic nerve. The optic nerve is the bundle of fibers that connect the eye to the brain. Some types of glaucoma are associated with elevated pressure inside the eye. In adults, diabetes nearly doubles the risk for glaucoma. All forms of diabetic eye disease have the potential to cause severe vision loss and blindness. We'll go back now with more details about diabetic retinopathy. What causes diabetic retinopathy? Chronically high blood sugar from diabetes is associated with damage to the tiny blood vessels in the retina, leading to diabetic retinopathy. The retina detects light and converts it to signals sent through the optic nerve to the brain. Diabetic retinopathy can cause blood vessels in the retina to leak fluid or hemorrhage or bleed, distorting vision. In its most advanced stage, new abnormal blood vessels proliferate, and that means increase in number, they say. The new abnormal blood vessels proliferate on the surface of the retina, which can lead to scarring and cell loss in the retina. Diabetic retinopathy may progress through 4 stages. They go from the milder to the more devastating, you might say. Number one is called mild non-proliferative retinopathy. In this case, small areas of balloon-like swelling in the retina's tiny blood vessels. These are called microaneurysms, and they occur at this earliest stage of the disease. These microaneurysms may leak fluid into the retina. There are small areas of balloon-like swellings in the retina, the blood vessels. Number two, and progression, moderate non-proliferative retinopathy. As the disease progresses, blood vessels that nourish the retina may swell and distort. They may also lose their ability to transport blood. Both conditions cause characteristic changes to the appearance of the retina and may contribute to DME, which is diabetic macular edema. The third step, severe non-proliferative retinopathy. many more blood vessels are blocked, depriving blood supply to areas of the retina. These areas secrete growth factors that signal the retina to grow new blood vessels. And this leads us to the fourth in the progression. This is called proliferative diabetic retinopathy. This is abbreviated PDR. Proliferative diabetic retinopathy. At this advanced stage, growth factors secreted by the retina trigger the proliferation of those new blood vessels, which grow along the inside surface of the retina and into the vitreous gel, which is the fluid that fills the eye. These new blood vessels are fragile, which makes them more likely to leak and bleed. Accompanying scar tissue can contract and actually cause retinal detachment, which is the pulling away of the retina from the underlying tissue, sort of like wallpaper peeling away from a wall. Retinal detachment can lead to permanent vision loss. So you've got the four stages of diabetic retinopathy there. Now the next question that's asked is, what is diabetic macular edema? What is DME? DME is the buildup of fluid, and this generally is described as edema. Buildup of fluid in a region of the retina called the macula. The macula is important for the sharp, straight-ahead vision that is used for reading, recognizing faces, and driving. DME, diabetic macular edema, is the most common cause of vision loss among people with diabetic retinopathy. About half of all people with diabetic retinopathy will develop DME, although it's more likely to occur as diabetic retinopathy worsens. DME can happen at any stage of the disease. Who is at risk for diabetic retinopathy? People with all types of diabetes, type 1, type 2, and gestational, are at risk for diabetic retinopathy. Risk increases the longer a person has diabetes. Between 40 and 45% of Americans diagnosed with diabetes have some stage of diabetic retinopathy, although only about half of those people are aware that they have it. Women who develop or have diabetes during pregnancy may have rapid onset or worsening of diabetic retinopathy. Next, we come to the section called symptoms and detection. What are the symptoms of diabetic retinopathy and DME, which is diabetic macular edema? Now we have the same pictures of those boys that I described last week. There's three different pictures showing the first one is showing the normal version of the picture. And the normal version shows two young boys. The one on the left has blonde hair, big smile on his face, and he's holding an orange ball in front of him. The one on the right has dark curly hair, another big smile, and he has a blue and turquoise shirt, and he's holding a red and white soccer ball in front of him. That is as you would see it if you had normal vision. In the middle picture, you have a picture of what it would be like if you had advanced diabetic retinopathy. You see black spots, irregularly shaped black spots, covering almost the entire picture, but some parts of the picture are still peeking out among the spots. Also, the picture is extremely blurred. These spots are actually floating spots, and they're actually hemorrhages. And if you see these require very prompt treatment. This is advanced diabetic retinopathy. These black spots cover your field of view. The picture on the right, same two boys. This time you'll see that the picture is very blurry, uniformly blurry. You can still see the colors, still see the smiles, but the details are blurred out. And this is an example of what you would see if you had diabetic macular edema. So the early stages of diabetic retinopathy usually have no symptoms. The disease often progresses unnoticed until it affects your vision. Bleeding from the abnormal retinal blood cells can cause the appearance of floating spots. These spots sometimes clear on their own, but without prompt treatment, bleeding often recurs, increasing the risk of permanent vision loss. If DME occurs, this is diabetic macular edema, it can cause the blurred vision that I just described. How are diabetic retinopathy and DME detected? Diabetic retinopathy and DME are detected during a comprehensive dilated eye exam that should include the following four things. Number one, you should have a visual acuity test. This is the eye chart test, and it measures a person's ability to see at various distances. The exam should also include something called tonometry. This test measures pressure inside the eye. The third thing that should be included is a pupil dilation. Drops are placed on the eye's surface, and these drops dilate or widen the pupil. This allows the physician to examine your retina and even the optic nerve. And also, they are saying your exam should include optical coherence tomography. This is abbreviated OCT. This technique is similar to ultrasound, but uses light waves instead of sound waves to capture images of tissues inside the body. OCT, that's optical coherence tomography, provides detailed images of tissues that can be penetrated by light, such as those found in the eye. A comprehensive dilated eye exam, like the one I just described, allows the doctor to check the retina for changes to blood vessels. He can also look for leaking blood vessels or warning signs of leaking blood vessels, such as fatty deposits. And I believe these are called drusen, aren't they? The next thing that the doctor can check for is the swelling of the macula, and he'd be looking for diabetic macular edema. And the doctor could also check for changes in the lens, and she could also check for damage to nerve tissue. This is all during a comprehensive dilated eye exam. If DME or severe diabetic retinopathy is suspected, then a fluorescein angiogram may be in order to use to look for damaged or leaky blood vessels. In this test, a fluorescent dye is injected into the bloodstream, often right into an arm vein. This provides pictures of the retinal blood vessels, and they are taken as the dye reaches the back of the eye. The next section is called Prevention and Treatment. How can people with diabetes protect their vision? Vision loss to diabetic retinopathy is sometimes irreversible. However, early detection and treatment can reduce the risk of blindness by 95%. That's a big one. I'm going to repeat that sentence. Early detection and treatment can reduce the risk of blindness by 95%. Early detection and treatment. Because diabetic retinopathy often lacks early symptoms, people with diabetes should get a comprehensive dilated eye exam at least once a year. People with diabetic retinopathy may need to have eye exams more frequently. Women with diabetes who become pregnant should have a comprehensive dilated eye exam as soon as possible. Other additional exams during pregnancy may be needed. Studies that have been done, such as Diabetes Control and Complications Trial, this is abbreviated DCCT. This trial has shown that controlling diabetes slows the onset and worsening of diabetic retinopathy. The Diabetes Control and Complications Trial study participants who kept their blood glucose level as close to normal as possible were significantly less likely than those without optimal glucose control to develop diabetic retinopathy, as well as kidney and nerve diseases. Other trials have shown that controlling elevated blood pressure and cholesterol can reduce the risk of vision loss among people with diabetes. Treatment for diabetic retinopathy is often delayed until it starts to progress to PDR, which is the proliferative diabetic retinopathy, or actually when they've discovered that the diabetic macular edema is occurring. Comprehensive dilated eye exams are needed more frequently as diabetic retinopathy becomes more severe. People with severe non-proliferative diabetic retinopathy have a high risk of going on to develop the proliferative diabetic retinopathy and may need a comprehensive dilated eye exam as often as every 2 to 4 months. How is DME treated? DME, the diabetic macular edema, can be treated with several therapies that may be used alone or in combination. The first one, anti-VEGF injection therapy. I pronounce it that way. I'm not sure that's accurate. It's anti, and then the initials VEGF. Anti-VEGF drugs are injected into the vitreous gel to block a protein called vascular endothelial growth factor, and that's the VEGF, vascular endothelial growth factor. The drugs will block that protein, and this can stimulate abnormal blood vessels to grow and leak fluid. Blocking VEGF can reverse abnormal blood vessel growth and decrease the fluid in the retina. The available anti-VEGF drugs include the ones you're probably familiar with, Avastin, which is bevacizumab, Lucentis, which generically is named ranibizumab, and Eylea, which is generically called aflibercept. Lucentis and Eylea, that's the last two, the three again were Avastin, Lucentis, and Eylea. So we come to Lucentis and Eylea are approved by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, for treating diabetic macular edema. Avastin was approved by the FDA to treat cancer, but it's commonly used to treat eye conditions, including the DME. The NEI-sponsored Diabetic Retinopathy Clinical Research Network compared Avastin, Lucentis, and Eylea in a clinical trial. The study found all three drugs to be safe and effective for treating most people with diabetic macular edema. Patients who started the trial with 20 over 40 or better vision experienced similar improvements in vision no matter which of the three drugs they were given. However, patients who started the trial with 20 over 50 or worse vision had greater improvements in their vision with Eylea. Most people require monthly anti-VEGF injections for the first 6 months of treatment. Thereafter, injections are needed less often, typically 3 to 4 during the second 6 months of treatment, about 4 during the second year of treatment, 2 in the third year, and just 1 in the fourth year, and none in the fifth year. Dilated eye exams may be needed less often as the disease stabilizes. Avastin, Lucentis, and Eylea vary greatly in cost and in how often they need to be injected, so patients really should discuss these issues with their eye care professional. And there's another way of treating DME, the macular edema. This is with a focal/grid macular laser surgery. In focal grid macular laser surgery, a few to hundreds of small laser burns are made to those leaking blood vessels in areas of edema near the center of the macula. Laser burns for DME slow the leakage of fluid, reducing swelling in the retina. The procedure is usually completed in one session, but some people may need more than one treatment. Focal grid laser is sometimes applied before anti-VEGF injections, sometimes on the same day, or even a few days after an anti-VEGF injection, and sometimes only when the DME fails to improve adequately after 6 months of anti-VEGF therapy. Another treatment for diabetic macular edema is corticosteroids. Corticosteroids, either injected or implanted into the eye, may be used alone or in combination with other drugs or laser surgery to treat DME. The Ozurdex implant, and this is the brand name for the drug called dexamethasone, the Ozurdex implant is for short-term use, while the Iluvien, and generically this is called fluocinolone acetonide, the Iluvien implant is longer-lasting. Both are biodegradable and release a sustained dose of corticosteroids to suppress the diabetic macular edema. Corticosteroid use in the eye increases the risk of cataract and glaucoma, however. So DME patients who use corticosteroids should be monitored for increased pressure in the eye and glaucoma. Next question, how is proliferative diabetic retinopathy treated? And this is abbreviated PDR, proliferative diabetic retinopathy. For decades, PDR has been treated with scatter laser surgery, sometimes called panretinal laser surgery or panretinal photocoagulation. Treatment involves making 1,000 to 2,000 tiny laser burns in areas of the retina away from the macula. These laser burns are intended to cause abnormal blood vessels to shrink. Although treatment can be completed in one session, two or more sessions are sometimes required. While it can preserve central vision, scatter laser surgery may cause some loss of side or peripheral vision, can cause some loss of color, and also night vision. Scatter laser surgery works best before new fragile blood vessels have started to bleed. Recent studies have shown that anti-VEGF treatment not only is effective for treating DME, but is also effective for slowing progression of diabetic retinopathy, including the PDR, the proliferative kind. So anti-VEGF is increasingly used as a first-line treatment for PDR, proliferative diabetic retinopathy. Next, we come to a question, what is a vitrectomy? A vitrectomy is the surgical removal of the vitreous gel in the center of the eye. The procedure is used to treat severe bleeding into the vitreous and is performed under local or general anesthesia. Ports, which are temporary watertight openings into the body, ports are placed in the eye to allow the surgeon to insert and remove instruments such as tiny light or small vacuum called a vitrector. A clear salt solution is gently pumped into the eye through one of the ports to maintain the eye pressure during surgery and to replace the removed vitreous. The same instruments used during vitrectomy also may be used to remove scar tissue or to repair a detached retina. Vitrectomy may be performed as an outpatient procedure or as an inpatient procedure, usually requiring a single overnight stay in the hospital. After treatment, the eye may be covered with a patch for days to weeks and may be red and sore. Drops may be applied to the eye to reduce inflammation and to reduce the risk of infection. If both eyes require vitrectomy, the second eye usually will be treated after the first eye has recovered. Now, big question is probably worrying you. What if treatment does not improve vision? Well, an eye care professional can help you locate and can make referrals for you to low vision and rehabilitation services. And your professional can also suggest devices that may help make the most of your remaining vision, maximize your remaining vision. Many community organizations all over the country and agencies offer information about low vision counseling, training, and other special services for people with visual impairments. There might be a nearby school of medicine or optometry, and they may also provide low vision and rehabilitation services. In Rochester, New York, where this program originates, we have the organization called ABVI, the Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired. They're located on Clinton Avenue, very accessible, a big parking lot, easy access to the building. Their phone number, if you have low vision or are interested in rehabilitation services for low vision, their phone number is 232-1111, area code 585. Now, what's doing in current research? And this, remember, the information was provided by NEI, which is the National Eye Institute, which is part of the National Institutes of Health. So the question is, what is the NEI doing to advance research on diabetic eye disease? The NEI is conducting and supporting research that seeks better ways to detect, treat, and prevent vision loss in people with diabetes. This research is being conducted in labs and clinical centers all across the country. For example, the Diabetic Retinopathy Clinical Research Network. They have a website. I'll repeat it in just a minute. The website is www.drcr.net, and this is the Diabetic Retinopathy Clinical Research Network. This organization conducts large multi-center trials to test new therapies for diabetic eye disease and to compare different therapies. The network is formed and was formed in the year 2002 and comprises more than 350 physicians practicing at more than 140 clinical sites across the country. Many of the sites are private practice eye clinics, enabling this network to quickly bring innovative treatments from research into community practice. That website is a treasure trove of information for you if you're interested in clinical trials. The website is www.drcr, Diabetic Retinopathy Clinical Research. It contains mentions clinics all over the United States and Canada. NEI-funded scientists are also seeking ways to detect diabetic retinopathy at earlier stages. For example, researchers are harnessing a technology called adaptive optics, abbreviated AO, adaptive optics to improve imaging techniques such as the OCT, the optical coherence tomography. AO, adaptive optics, was developed by astronomers seeking to improve the resolution on their telescopes by filtering out distortions in the atmosphere. In the clinic, in the eye clinic, diagnostic devices that use AO, adaptive optics, may improve the detection of subtle changes in retinal tissue and blood vessels. The information, as I said, came from the National Eye Institute, and they have a few points here for you to remember. Number one, diabetic eye disease comprises a group of eye conditions that affect people with diabetes. They can include diabetic retinopathy, diabetic macular edema, cataracts, or glaucoma. Another point, all forms of diabetic eye disease have the potential to cause severe vision loss or blindness. Diabetic retinopathy involves changes to retinal blood vessels that can cause them to bleed or leak fluid, thus distorting vision. Diabetic retinopathy is the most common cause of vision loss among people with diabetes and a leading cause of blindness among working age adults. Controlling diabetes can prevent or delay vision loss. It's suggested that you control diabetes by taking medications as prescribed, staying physically active, and maintaining a healthy diet. Because diabetic retinopathy often goes unnoticed until vision loss occurs, people with diabetes should get a comprehensive dilated eye exam at least once a year. Another point, early detection, timely treatment, and appropriate follow-up care of diabetic eye disease can protect against vision loss. And the final point to remember, diabetic retinopathy can be treated with several therapies used alone or in combination. Well, now with the end of this program, we are done with the number two eye disease, diabetic eye disease. I will leave you with a quote from the venerable American poet Robert Frost. He says, "In three words, I can summarize everything I have learned about life. It goes on." The wisdom of Robert Frost. Thank you for listening, and I hope you have a great week. You've been listening to Enabled, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. Our technical director is Maureen Rich, and I'm Nancy Zimmer. I hope you'll join me again next week for more updates and information and encouraging stories. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can listen to it at our website, wxxi.org.